Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus. It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Welcome to
That's I Praise,
a Nicolas Cage podcast.
I am your host, VH Zest.
And I am your other host, Captain Nostalgia with the old man shoes.
That's right. All right, so this week, month, yes.
Whoa. We should probably welcome Happy New Year. This is the first
This is
the first one we've done all year.
We haven't said anything since last year.
Yeah, we, I don't know how much you want to get into it. We just, life got busy with the film festival and some other personal things that came up, so, but we're back.
Yeah. Yeah, we're back. And we're so excited to talk about a delightful Disney-produced Nicolas Cage film. A little film called The Sorcerer's Apprentice. All right, so this film, it stars Nicolas Cage and Jay Baruchel. I think that's his last name pronounced correctly. Like, it's the guy from, you know, How to Train Your Dragon. And
he's out of my league. Random Acts of Violence. Continue.
Okay, but people are mostly going to know How to Train Your Dragon.
But he's just a voice in that.
Yeah, but he's top tier. I mean, it's his voice is so iconic. Anyway.
It's just a voice, though. I can't see that face.
His voice doesn't go with his face anyway. So this movie is really interesting. It's based off of just a short, I guess you could say, that has no words, from Disney's Fantasia that was released. Gosh, I don't even know when. I believe my dad was a kid when it came out. So it's probably 50s or 60s. Of the same name. It was a short of the same name. It's all about sorcery and magic and stuff. And Josh, what are your initial feelings and thoughts and first impression kind of a deal?
This one surprised me. I'll be really honest. Okay. I am not a fantasy guy by any means. Sure. I try over and over and over again to be as open-minded as I can when it comes to fantasy. And sometimes it surprises me, and sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it's kind of just like, oh, this is just blending in with the tropes. Sure. And I will absolutely say this 100% surprised me.
Cool.
I really enjoyed this film. I do have my qualms with it.
Oh, totally.
But yeah, it's a fun little movie. I didn't expect to have as much fun with it as I did.
Yeah.
But you want me to hit you with some trivia right off the bat?
You said you have a lot of trivia. Do we want to like mix it up?
We do want to mix it up. So that's why I want to throw this one in there.
Sure.
So this is the third time that Nicolas Cage and director John Turnbaum have teamed together.
Okay.
Do you know what their other two previous films are? And they've both been under the same, they've both been covered by That's High Praise.
Oh my gosh. That doesn't narrow it down, but so much. My first guess is honestly probably going to be National Treasure.
National Treasure.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this movie has Disney's fingerprints all over it, but it has a similar feel at times. With some of the world building and things like that, as National Treasure does. Some of the set design and stuff feels similar.
You want to guess the second one?
Ghost Rider?
National Treasure 2, Buck Singer.
Oh my God. It was the same director, really?
Yes, and he also directed The Kid. I don't know if you ever saw that.
Oh, yeah, I love that movie.
With Bruce Willis.
Yeah, Bruce Willis and the guy who played Beans from Even Stevens.
Oh, yeah, I forgot he was in that. Just a random in there.
Yeah. Yeah, so this movie is, yeah, it has, like I said, it has Disney's fingerprints all over it. If you're really into films like, I guess one of the newer ones would be Jungle Cruise or Pirates of the Caribbean or things like that. Just really like fantasy meets real world. Enchanted is probably a really good example. Yeah, if you're really into films like that, you'll like this film. It's very much kind of brings in a lot of Disney's really good nostalgia, probably because all of our nostalgia is built off of Disney in a large way.
Our generation.
Yeah, maybe. Our generation. Yeah, yeah. And so it's really good about there's a really fun Star Wars reference, and this is before Disney owned Star Wars.
There's also an Indiana Jones reference.
Yeah, there is, which was wonderful because it specifically references a scene that had to do with, it was like right after Alfred Molina is in a scene in this particular Indiana Jones movie. Was it Last Crusade, I think?
I think so,
yeah. It was like the beginning of Last Crusade. There's Alfred Molina's character is in and out, and then Indy like takes this bag of sand and he like puts it where this idol was supposed to be and tries to measure it out. And they reference that scene, and Alfred Molina co-stars in this film, and it's a lot of fun.
I was about to, first off, two things. I was about to say, are you going to expand upon the cast? Because you're just like, Nicolas Cage, Jay Baruchel.
Yeah, Alfred Molina is the only other one I know by name, if I'm being honest with you.
So Alfred Molina's in this. Toby Kebbell is in this. And Toby Kebbell has kind of made a career of either one of two things. Either being stop motion.
Cool.
Or he has been just like very bit. Bad guy roles, very forgettable bad guy roles.
Yeah.
And then you also have Monica Bellucci. Monica Bellucci,
yeah.
Who has she did Passion of the Christ. She did Shoot 'Em Up a couple years before this one. She was also the Frenchman's wife in The Matrix 2 and 3. And she's kind of where some of my qualms for this movie lie, but
sure.
Let me say that this is looking at this in the landscape of Disney's legacy in the 21st century.
Totally.
This is really interesting to talk about because this is on like the outskirts of like the reboot revival that Disney is getting ready to do within the next few years.
Yeah.
And you can kind of tell by this point, it's also worth mentioning that like, this is the time where Pirates of the Caribbean is no longer the fruitful franchise that it once was.
Yep.
And it kind of looks like they're trying to look for something else to be that franchise.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's really interesting that they would kind of go to this short that, while it is iconic, not a whole lot of people in this generation are, like, knowing it. I would say that the only people that know of, like, the reference to Fantasia that this film makes wonderfully.
Oh yeah, totally.
But even like I could picture what it was, but couldn't actually like place like this is what it is.
Yep.
And I think that speaks volumes to like you have to truly be a cinephile in order to really know like what this film references. And so I just think in the landscape of like Disney's 21st century, I think this is an often overlooked picture.
Yeah.
Because of it. It's not quite franchise material, but it's not quite the reboot revolution that we're getting ready to see.
Yeah. Yeah. I totally agree. It's weird. Fantasia is weird in general because I think with Fantasia, there's this massive, massive gap in generations. You know, Fantasia, the original release, was probably more our parents' generation ish. Oh,
probably grandparents.
Not earlier. Yeah.
I want to say it's like 40s or 30s or 40s.
Yeah. And then, like, And then there's us, and we grew up in like the 90s and early 2000s. So you had like a whole, you know, couple decades of kids who may have known Disney, but Fantasia went totally under the radar for them. And I think that is probably a good indication, good reason of why this movie may have gone under the radar and may not have had the success, despite it being a Disney picture, that it could have, because I think like its initial reference was lost on too many people at the time of its release. I don't know. I have a feeling you're gonna have more trivia for us.
I was actually curious, so like I looked it up real quick to kind of see what the budget for this one was, to mm-hmm. see if it truly was a loss. And this film, you want to guess the budget for what it was?
Oh man, shoot. 24 million.
24 million.
What? I don't know. You said guess.
Is that your final answer?
Okay, 10 million.
150 million.
What? What?
Yeah, according to Wikipedia, you know, here.
You were awful critical of some of the CGI in this.
And this actually comes from the source for this comes from the Los Angeles Times.
Wow.
And this also opened up right against Inception within like a week or two of it
but
opening.
It was in the like it wasn't like a straight to video.
No. Okay, this was actually like a big screen, and this is also worth mentioning in terms of like Nicolas Cage's career too, because like this is like also right on the cusp of his like direct to video like transition era that we've spent a lot of time covering on this podcast.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, where does this line up? With the National Treasure franchise, like both movies,
this came
out in like what, 2010?
2010. So this is a couple years after the second film.
Okay.
But I want to ask you a question, and this is where my cinephile nerdiness comes into play. Do you know how to know if a movie is a hit or a loss?
I guess not.
Okay. So. The budget that I presented to you, the 150, does not include marketing. So they say in order to kind of judge where your film is a success or not, is you want to essentially take your initial budget, double it for the marketing budget, so it brings it to 300 million. And this one scored at I want to say this is just domestically. According to Box Office Mojo, it's only made $215 million at the box office.
Dang.
So lost Disney quite a lot of money.
Yeah, yeah. Assuming that they did double on marketing.
Yeah, but I mean, even if they only had spent like two-thirds of that, I mean, you're still losing a lot of money.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, which is a bummer, honestly, because... Do you think Inception had anything to do with it? Because, I mean, they're not related, but there was just quite a lot of theatrical buzz around Inception, and maybe this movie simply got overlooked.
I think a little bit so. I think that there are some times where you have movies that are... and also, too, like, I don't want to get, like, too hung up on this, but I also question at this time is, like, who is the intended audience for this movie?
That's a good point. Like, is it for kids? Is it for the old hats, like the Disney fans that would have known Fantasia? Or is it just for National Treasure fans? You know, like, who is it for? Yeah,
because to me, this film, tonally speaking, isn't quite for families, because there is sorcery, there's witchcraft, there's, you know, visual pentagram that are, you know, so it's a lot darker.
It is, but that's also kind of been Disney's shtick for a long time. I mean, they used to build kids movies that are like that in the 80s.
Yeah, but again, that was a different time period.
True.
So like in the 2010s, like if this was released in the 90s, like I could feel like you can market towards people that are fans of The Crow, The Craft.
True.
You know, those gothic emo kids that were like being risen up, and by this time, like, a lot of those things were dead, and like cinema was also starting to shift into the blockbuster phase where you had The Dark Knight, you had the MCU fully in swing.
Oh, true. You know, I was going to mention that, like, I don't know how you feel about this, but to me, this movie felt like, purely on a genre basis, it felt like a superhero movie. It had a similar flow to a superhero movie. Not that I felt like anybody was the hero, not that it obviously was based off of a comic, but the style of writing felt similar.
It had the scope of a superhero film.
Yeah.
I will give you that. But there... And it does kind of have the formula, because I would say that, like, a lot of, like, my issues with the story kind of line up with a lot of what we see happen in superhero movies, which I think me and you, like, while we are fans of comics, we're both, like, hypercritical of those, and I think a large portion of that is because of fatigue.
That is true, especially... Yeah, especially nowadays, and especially, like, you and I loving DC comics, and... DC not really getting the recognition that it has even has deserved when it has done well in the film, you know, in movies and TV. Yeah, so do we want to actually talk about the plot or, like, the characters in this film?
Yeah, I feel like we've talked about, like, the landscape of this movie, surrounding its release long enough. So hit us with the plot synopsis.
Yeah, all right. So it's pretty simple. I mean... The idea is that Merlin was real, and, you know, 1,000+ years ago, and they say that, like, his greatest arch nemesis was, they call her Morgana Le Fay. I don't know why. I've always known her as Morgan Le Fay.
I wonder, though, if that's, like, a DC trade-off.
I think it has to do, yeah, I think it's a rights deal with DC.
Sure.
Yeah. But anyway, so Merlin raises up these three sorcerers. And he has three apprentices, in his dying efforts, to, like, destroy his arch nemesis, he traps her and one of his apprentices, in this, it looks like a Russian nesting doll. It's 100% what it looks like. They call it the Grimhold. With his, like, dying last words, he gives this ring to Balthazar, which is Nicolas Cage's character, and also a very, very overused archaic name, see Scorpion King.
I don't know why that was so funny.
He gives this ring to him, and he's like, find the youth who can wield this ring. They will have my power, and they will are the only one who will be able to destroy Morgana Le Fay. And that's, like, the, you know, like, the intro that you get. And then it more or less just kind of skips, like, 1,000 years into the future to the 21st century, to this, like, little kid who stumbles into this, like, arcane history shop.
Yeah,
basically. So anyway, he meets Balthazar, and he happens to stumble in by coincidence. He was chasing this note across the street, and that he wrote to this girl. And
a note that is unnecessarily a subplot.
Yeah.
Throughout the rest of the movie. Whole movie.
It was just like, do you want to be my Czech friend? Czech boyfriend.
Girlfriend.
Yeah, or girlfriend, yeah. And that was it. And so, anyway, the wind blows it off, and it goes into this arcane shop. And so he... He meets Balthazar, and Balthazar basically hands him his ring, and the ring goes onto his finger magically. And then...
Fast forward another 10 years.
Yeah, fast forward another 10 years. We don't want to, like, get into the nitty-gritty here. So fast forward another 10 years, he gets embarrassed, runs out of the shop, pees himself, whatever.
He didn't pee himself.
Okay, something spilled, whatever. He gets embarrassed out of this arcane shop in front of all his classmates. And then you skip forward 10 years and he's a college kid, and he's a physics, major. And, he blah, blah, blah. He meets Balthazar again, and Balthazar, like, brings up the ring. He's like, you still have this, but you don't use it, or whatever. And so he trains him in sorcery. And he explains that, like, And honestly, this has been used before when it comes to like the idea of magic. And it is very interesting. The idea that like human beings only use a certain percentage of their brain, but a sorcerer uses 100% of their brain, and that's why they're able to do what they do. And he like equates it to why this kid, whose name is Dave, is able to understand physics so well. And the kid is like, all right, so is science magic or is magic science? And Balthazar is like,
yes
to both. And so that is, to me, that's one of the like really cool parts of the movie, is you get to see this kid like learn magic, but also understand it because of physics and because of his like nerdy science kid background. And it like actually makes sense to him. It's not just like, this kid, for some reason in the world, can wield this magic power arbitrarily.
Yeah, so they basically have to team up to take down Afro Molina.
Yeah, exactly.
Raising dead dudes.
Yes.
I just want to find out. Because you laid the foundation really well. You just kind of trailed off there towards...
I wanted you to chime in.
Yeah, so I'm going to hit you with a quick trivia fact real quick.
Nice.
Bam. So in this movie, Nicolas Cage's character, Balthazar, drives a 1935's Rolls-Royce Phantom. It's one of a kind.
Wow.
Belongs to Nicolas Cage.
Of course it does. Oh, my heart. That's amazing. I'm so happy.
The filmmakers were trying to find a car for his character to drive, and Nicolas Cage was basically just like, I mean, you guys can use mine. It's an option.
Gosh, that's so cool. Man, that's so cool. Nick Cage is the coolest person.
So one thing that I want to start with before we get into like the plot and everything is...
I think it's too late.
I know, but like digging into like what we think about it, like the mental health themes.
Oh, yeah.
The soundtrack.
Dude.
Dude, this soundtrack is like, it's unnecessarily good.
totally. And it's not like it's like filled with a ton of songs that I would just listen to all the time, but it's filled with a ton of songs that are iconic and that flow really well together. And they're really great for, and some of them are even, or like came out 8+ years earlier than the movie did, but they just maintain such a nostalgic feel, and they just, that's a great soundtrack. It's well built.
I got it right here.
Oh, man,
let me list it off.
Give it
so it started off with Jimmy Eat World's The Middle, Fiction Planes Denied, One Republic's Secrets, Tobias J Record, Ashley Witt, Drags, BT, La Nocturne de some French.
What?
Stevie Wonder's Superstition, which I really loved seeing that. One Republic's Secrets. Here's one that I bet you didn't know.
Okay.
Apparently, I want to say Jolly Bershaw, which is related to Jay.
Yeah.
Has a secret called I'm Awesome. Is a song that is on the soundtrack. Paul Douglas bringing in some more French music. O plus S. Is New Life, Group Love, Gold Coast, Ruscala, Your Body Is Calling Me, and One Republic has three songs in this, but Secrets is used twice.
Yeah.
And then Alpha Rev's Phoenix Burn. I just want to say that it really bugs me when...
Did you mention The Middle?
Yeah, that's
okay.
What I saw.
Okay.
It really bugs me when movies use the same song twice.
Yeah.
I don't know why. It just does.
We did this in Valley Girl, because Valley Girl used Melt With You like 4 times. Yeah. Unnecessary. But yeah, and not all those are like songs that you might know off the top of your head, but I promise if you listen to them, you'll be like, oh, this song. Yeah, really solid soundtrack. Like, and then it was really super satisfying. They recreate, if you're at all familiar with the Fantasia short called Sorcerer's Apprentice, what happens is that there's this sorcerer, like this old wizard, who wears a hat, and he puts the hat on Mickey Mouse, and tells Mickey Mouse to like do some chores, and Mickey Mouse is having to like basically like swab this like living area, and he's just like coming through with like buckets and mops, and I think there's some brooms in there, and so he's doing it by hand at first, and then he's like, I've got this hat on, and he starts enchanting things, and he enchants the mops and the brooms and the buckets to fill themselves and to mop the floor themselves. And so the Dave character, the kid's character, has this essentially this underground lab, and he has this girl that is coming to see him. He had like spilled some things, and they had been working all day, and so he was like, I'm going to mop. And then he does the same thing where he's like, he has a bunch of mops and brooms and he enchants them. And then all of a sudden, before you know it, like the mops are like tapping him on the shoulder and there's like water up to like his shins. And it's a little campy. And of course, like Nicolas Cage, which you'll probably bring this up, Josh, Nicolas Cage like comes in and just kind of saves the scene.
Multiple times.
Yes. With like a like sort of like a dispel magic sort of spell, for all the D&D nerds. As tropey as that is, and as kind of campy as the scene is, it's a fantastic throwback to the original short, and they use the same music, and it's just beautiful. It's just so satisfying.
If you or someone you know is listening to this podcast right now, and you're struggling with suicide, addiction, self-harm, or depression, we encourage you guys to please reach out. This is the heartbeat of why we do what we do. Suicide is currently the 10th leading cause of death in the United States, and as of this recording, there are 132 suicides that take place each and every day on American soil. And when you scale back internationally, there are 800,000 successful suicides. That is one death roughly every 40 seconds. So if you or someone you know is struggling, you guys can go to victimsandvillains.net/hope. That resource is going to be right in the description wherever you guys are currently listening or streaming this. There you'll find resources that include the National Suicide Lifeline, which is 1-800-273-8255. You can also text HELP to 741-741. We also have a plethora of other resources, including churches, getting connected with counselors, LGBT resources like the Trevor Project, and also Veteran Hotline as well. Please, if you hear nothing else in the show, understand that you, yes, you listening to this right now, have value and worth. We get it. Suicide, depression, mental health, these are hard topics, and the stigma around them doesn't make it any easier. But please consider the resources right in the descriptions below, wherever you guys are listening, because, once again, you have value and you have worth. So please, stay with us.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Yeah, it was a nice touch to see that come to life.
Yeah.
Can we just get like all of like, can I get my gripes out?
Oh, dude. Just vent. I've been waiting for it, honestly.
Just vent for a second. I talked about this during the movie, but the CGI in this is, you think for $150 million, like, I know that like Nicolas Cage is like a big name.
Yeah.
And, like, you probably had to pay for some of these songs.
Yeah.
But, like, where does your money go? If this is $150 million and this is this level of CGI is, like, what you have to show for it, like, it's pretty piss poor.
Yeah, I mean, some CGI is better than others. I would say it's hit and miss. But, yeah, there's definitely some of it that is just, like, they kind of made sure certain things were in and out of the scene so that they didn't have to be picture perfect because they didn't have the budget for it to be picture perfect, which is very interesting to me because I wonder, it's like, you know, you've got kind of like a Disney legacy sort of feature here. that came out in theaters, and this is Disney, so their pockets are virtually bottomless. I mean, they were able to buy Marvel not but so long after this. And yeah, I don't know why the CGI really took the hit that it did.
So the CGI was like really, really bad to me, but I think the worst offender for this, as a cinephile, I think to me one of the worst offenses for a movie is to end like unnaturally.
Yes, it does end horribly unnaturally.
So my biggest offense with that, out of everything, is the happy ending syndrome that Disney's famous for. And with that comes the qualm of, why did we have to have the character of Rebecca Becky in this? Like,
why do we have to have her?
Like Dave's love interest in this literally has no bearing on the entire story.
I guess,
except for one scene
in the beginning.
Not in the beginning. The scene where he surrenders the rusting, what do they call the nesting egg? The nesting egg and his, like,
The Grimhold
and the Merlin ring.
Yeah. He surrenders it to Alfred Molina's character, yeah, because he threatens to kill the girlfriend.
Yeah. That is the only time that, like, she has any stakes in the story.
I don't know. I don't know if I agree with you, because she also, like, helped him toward the end. Like, she climbed that building and she, like, turned the, like, satellite dish that that Morgana was using to, like, for her spell. And she also was, like, kind of a big catalyst in the beginning of him even finding Balthazar, because he wrote her that list and the wind blew it. Wrote her the note.
I mean, you could have, like, traded out that storyline, and, like, his entire thing could have been, yeah, like,
totally. But, you know,
he's
what?
A 9-year-old kid.
Die Hard has to be a Christmas movie, then you have to be okay with this girlfriend.
Look, he could, that beginning scene could have been taken out. Like,
hear me out,
okay? If you took her out, the circumstances by which you're talking about could be completely the same, just different characters. So hear me out.
Sure.
All right. So in the beginning, with the note, could have been changed to something like $50 or $100. You know, they're on a field trip. If you're 9 years old, that's a lot of money.
Sure.
You're gonna chase it down.
Sure.
So the bearing of,
it's a little shallow, but sure.
It is. But, you know, I'm just thinking as, like, what I liked as a 9-year old, like, you know, $20.
Could have been a Magic the Gathering card.
It could have, yeah. You know, it could have been a Pokemon card.
Yeah.
But the second thing where, like, you know, he could have killed the dog. You know,
it's kind of
dark for Disney.
Movie and you can't kill,
but you could have also put Bennett in that part, like that entire, like, third act where, like, she's the sidekick. You could have totally had Bennett, his roommate.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I think the roommate was kind of a disposable character and didn't really need to be sometimes.
They could have done more.
I also think that, like, you know, because they reveal sort of later on that Balthazar and the other sorcerer, the sorceress, the other apprentice, Veronica, had, like, a thing going on. And so to me, like, it made that was, like, the one thing, if any, that Dave had to relate to Balthazar with. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was the only thing that they, like, could kind of understand each other on.
I mean, I guess from that, like, but I would have wanted there to be, like, a more predominant role for her then.
I mean, I see what you're saying, but even with Balthazar, like, he, like, warns him against, like, no dating. It's like the whole, like, Star Wars thing, you know, like, no falling in love, that kind of a deal. And he, like, warns him about it. And I think that really what it comes about is, like, it's not that he doesn't believe in it. It's that he knows that if this kid puts himself on the line emotionally, then it could end really, really bad for him, because it ended really, really bad for Balthazar, and he doesn't want to see it happen to this kid.
Let me give you some quick trivia real quick.
All right, let's get trivia.
All right. So you would think that this movie is based on its Fantasia roots, when in actuality is also based on a late 1890s symphonic poem by Paul Dukas and the 1797 Johann Wolfgang von God, I probably mispronounced that. Ballad also.
Ballet?
No, ballad.
Ballad?
Ballad.
Wow. So these are actually like poems or songs?
Yes.
Wow. And they made a movie about it?
They did. Also, to your point earlier, in Arthurian legend, Morgan Le Fay is alternatively known as Morgana, Morgaine, Morgan, Morgaine, Morganti, Morgan, and Morgan.
Interesting.
So
cool.
Was there anything like, because I know you were like really hyped on this, like you love fantasy.
I really do. I love like, yeah, I love fantasy. I love the whole, I'm a big Narnia fan. So the whole like fantasy meets the real world is a lot of fun for me. Jumanji, that sort of deal.
Sure.
Yeah, I really do. What, you're gonna ask something?
I was going to ask, like, was there anything that like you actually like didn't like about this movie?
I mean, it wasn't a perfect movie. Yeah, I think some of the pacing was, I mean, it's a Disney movie, so they all kind of have this problem sometimes, but some scenes were just like, oh, okay, so like you have this really simple story that I feel like I've been told 100 times in the beginning of like, you know, Merlin, and he fights a bad guy and he gets lost or dies, you know, and then you cut to something else entirely. Like it's not that different from, let's say, Sword in the Stone
I think why you think about that, like I think that like it's not just Disney, it's a lot of any of these like modern interpretations of these like I don't know like what era you would call them, but like these like Arthurian lores,
they all have that same problem of like, and I think that's part of the reason why like the Green Knight did so well is it didn't have this problem. Is like the pacing is just, it's just one thing after the other, after the other, after the other. And a lot of times I want something that isn't so simple, you know, and I love fantasy, but that's probably the biggest critique I could give fantasy overall. It's always the bad guys are dark and ugly looking. The good guys are not. And that is what it is. I mean, even like Lord of the Rings, as incredible and as deep as it is, like it is extremely black and white. There's really nothing or very little toward the idea of like deception and temptation and things like that. Things that like look good but might not be. Things that don't look good but are. And, you know, things like that. There's not a whole ton of real like depth explored across like what you might call the spectrum of morality. It's just, this is bad, this is good, and the pacing isn't really any different. It's just from one thing to the next, to the next, to the next, and it develops as naturally as they can make it develop, but it's also a kid's movie, and, you know, I don't know how much I can expect from it, really.
It's really hard to, like, get deep into, like, family movies because... Right. Of its intended audience. I feel like Pixar does a really great job at doing that.
Yeah, a lot of times.
But I don't feel like you're gonna ever get that with like these live action movies.
Yeah.
Like from Pirates onward, like a lot of these movies are intended to be spectacles.
Sure.
And I definitely feel like that this one has it, and there are certain moments within it that I feel like speak to these like quieter character moments where that go pace you're talking about kind of settles itself down. Yeah. And you get to see these characters actually feel fleshed out.
Yeah,
because I think that's one of the things that this film suffers from is like a lot of these characters feel really one note.
Yeah.
And really familiar. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I'm glad you brought up Pirates of the Caribbean because, and I'm just going to speak to the first one. I think it's the strongest as far as the narrative goes. But in the first movie, like, you have a little bit of an intro where, like, they kind of, like, find Will Turner on a raft, and then there's, like, some pirates, and that's most of the intro, and then it kind of skips to the main time frame of the movies. And then all, like, the predecessing lore is built into the narrative. And, it's a much smoother pacing overall. And I think, too, we're, like, because the movie is about pirates, you realize that, like, when you root for the good guy, you're not rooting for someone whose morality is established. And when you root for the bad guy, you're rooting for something that is a little bit more closer to home as far as, like, nationalism and military pride and things like that goes. You know, so, like, that is part of the reason. And amidst all of that, it's still a Disney movie. It still feels like a Disney movie. It's still a family movie. It doesn't really cross any hard lines as far as, like, content or anything like that goes. It still successfully references lore and an amusement park ride and things like that. It's beautifully cast. The music is good, etc. You know, and I think, like, I don't know. Maybe this was Disney being lazy. Maybe this was just sometimes the problem with our Arthurian sort of lore is that it does become just simple. But I think Pirates is a really interesting example of, like, fantasy that is done beautifully, just so smoothly. So I think, like I said, like, if there's anything I really didn't like about this movie, I mean, I could nitpick certain things. I feel like there were certain things that, like, this, you know, like, Balthazar at one point references something that I'm pretty sure Dave's character never told him. But you could also write that off as, like, oh, he's a sorcerer. He just knows that kind of stuff. You know, but it's obviously, like, little narrative holes. And I could be nitpicky about, that or about CGI or whatever. But I think my biggest problem overall is, like, is the pacing, and that ending was just so, it's such a buildup and a decent buildup. It wasn't amazing, but it was a decent buildup to an ending that just stops. It was just credits.
Yeah. The ending is pretty terrible.
It's pretty bad.
Considering, like, how epic of a scope, like, and to bring up Pirates again, like,
yeah,
the ending of Pirates of the Caribbean is literally the same exact thing, except it's on water. Like, yeah, that's the only thing. And they're actually successful. So, like, long story short, like, the ending of this movie is, like, trying to, like, raise the dead. And, like, that's the whole purpose of this single, like, ending, is that, like, Morgana has been let out. She's going to essentially raise everyone up. And then Nicolas Cage dies, comes back to life. He's reunited with his love. And Jay and Teresa just fly off into the sunset. And
yeah,
it's just, it's very fast paced.
Yep.
But also at the same time, it's just, it feels tonally just dead with the rest of the movie.
Totally. Absolutely. Yeah, it's very, it's typical and it's boring. It's typical and it's boring. And yeah, like, so you actually see it start to happen when, like, Morgana is slowly raising up these, like, dead sorcerers and sorceresses across the world. They, like, shift to, like, you see, like, skeletons and tombs start to move. You see, like, my favorite part was probably, like, statues in Egypt start to, like, burst open. And it's really epic and cool and satisfying. And then he stops her, which is pretty cool because it, like, really brings together his scientific prowess and mind with his ability to wield magic, which they, you know, discussed is basically the same. And so he stops her and all this, and then it's just, yeah. I think the fact that, and I think you have, like, some trivia about this, but, like, this movie, had this movie gotten a sequel, maybe the ending wouldn't be as bad as it is, but the ending is a travesty.
So in my research, there's actually no plans for a sequel, which
is weird because there's an after credit scene.
Is there?
Yes.
What's the after credit scene?
It's okay. So it's like in like the Arcana Cabana or something similar to that, and you see in this glass like case Mickey's hat from the original. Like it's like made in real life, very dark blue with stars on it, pointed hat.
I think that's just an Easter egg.
And then you get, no. And then it zooms out slowly and you see the hat that, I believe it's the hat that Alfred Molina wore, and a hand picks it up.
Interesting. Yeah, because I literally can't find anything on a sequel. So give me a second real quick.
Yeah.
So I got something for you here.
Cool.
This is an article. We'll link it in the descriptions below. So this is from Cinema Blend, and this is five times that Disney has tried to launch a franchise in a post-Pirates world. And one of them is The Lone Ranger.
What?
Prince of Persia, The Sands of Time, Tomorrowland, John Carter, and, of course, The Sorcerer's Apprentice. So
John Carter was a sad one. I never did see Prince of Persia, but I did want to.
Okay. Well, I'm sure all these movies are now streaming on either Hulu or Disney Plus.
Unless they're embarrassed.
The Lone Ranger, this is coming from the article written by Dirk Libby on Halloween 2018 about The Sorcerer's Apprentice, specifically with the sequel and its franchise eligibility. The Lone Ranger really should have been... let me start over again. The Lone Ranger thing really should have never happened because Disney should have learned their lesson years ago. Back in 2010, the studio took the director and star of the popular National Treasure movies and brought them together to make a film based on another well-known character, The Sorcerer's Apprentice. And while the movie has essentially nothing to do with the segment from the Fantasia that Disney fans know, save one scene, including the brooms, it was an attempt to turn that name into a new action franchise. The Sorcerer's Apprentice wants to be a franchise so badly it even has a post-credit scene to help set up the future installments that would never happen. 2010 seems to be the point where Nicolas Cage started to make a transition from Hollywood headliner to slightly crazy guy that'll star in almost anything.
Praise the Lord.
Whether the Sorcerer's Apprentice lack of box office reception was the case or an effect of this change really isn't clear. In the end, the movie just wasn't engaging and certainly not the kind of movie that leaves you wanting more. And I will definitely agree with that. And
yeah, like the movie is fun. I can see myself watching it again, maybe even a few more times every once in a while, because it is just that fun. But it's only fun enough on its own. You know, I don't need more of what it offers.
Yeah, I think this world is really fun. Like, I feel like there are certain times when you can come to a world and want to be invested, not just the titular character you're following, yeah, but the world as a whole.
Right.
The best example I would point to for this would definitely be, two examples. One of them would definitely be like John Wick and the hotel that I am, the Continental. I believe that's it. But also two, Toy Story and Lightyear this year.
Yeah.
So
excited. Oh my gosh.
Same. So, like, I think that, you know, there's just not enough for this world, and I think that this movie tells you all that you need to know. It's a flawed movie, but by God, it's so much fun.
Yeah.
And I think the reason why it's so much fun is because Bershaw and Cage have really great chemistry.
They really do. Yeah.
But also at the same time, I think it speaks to, like, the magic in it is really fun. Like, I like these like fish out of water stories when you're dealing with like these elements, because you feel like you're an entry point into this world through the title character.
Yeah. I really wish, like, looking back, and maybe I need to watch Doctor Strange again, although it was fine. 6 out of 10 probably. But I really wish that like Doctor Strange would have. I wish they'd have taken a risk and put a Sorcerer's Apprentice reference in Doctor Strange, because I think like this movie did make me think of Doctor Strange a decent amount, where it was like, it's the whole science magic thing, you know.
Oh, they're confirmed for Multiverse of Madness.
Sorcerer's Apprentice?
Yeah.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
Like these characters?
Yeah.
But I thought you said there was not a sequel.
It's not a sequel. It could be an Easter egg.
I'm sorry. So is Nicolas Cage going to be in the MCU?
I'm just messing with you.
I'm sorry. You can never mess with me like that again. I want my Ghost Rider back, man. Anyway, you understand what I mean. Like, I felt like watching this movie that it was discount Doctor Strange, but perhaps more fun than Doctor Strange was, at least at some points. And it would have been a lot of fun to see Doctor Strange like make some sort of callback.
All right. So I kind of feel like we've argued a little bit too much on like the negative side of this.
Okay.
And I want to honestly, dude, like the chemistry between Bershaw and Cage, I feel like really made this movie fun for me, because yeah. I feel like magic movies are genuinely going to like be a fun time for me. Like yeah. Hocus Pocus, The Craft, first one, The Prestige. We don't talk about the second one. I mean, even The Illusionist.
Oh, dude.
So good. Oh,
incredible movie.
Shoot. But like, I feel like this movie just does a really great job at capturing the spirit of those movies,
yeah,
and just has an absolute blast with
yeah,
them.
Totally. It doesn't take itself too seriously, which to some extent is to its detriment, but it's also what makes it a lot of fun. Yeah, the chemistry is really, like, there were a number of times like we just found ourselves laughing because Nicolas Cage would just, I mean, maybe that's just our affinity for Nicolas Cage, but Nicolas Cage would just say something and it was just like the chemistry was just perfect and it was just a great delivery. And yeah, it was awesome. It was a lot of fun. And it felt very much like, you know, because his character is 1,000 years old. And sometimes he kind of wears that on his sleeve. And so there's this like running joke of like him making the Dave character wear old man shoes because rubber soles affect like his casting abilities. And it's just a running joke through the whole movie. And it's a lot of fun.
Plus you'll look dapper too.
Yeah.
How would you guys like to help us get mental health resources into schools, conventions, and other events? Well, now you can. Simply go to patreon.com/victimsandvillains for as little as $1 a month. You guys can help us get mental health resources into current and upcoming generations, educate, and break down stigma surrounding mental health, suicide, and depression. And you get exclusive content that you can't get anywhere else. And you guys can tell us which Nicolas Cage movie you want us to cover, and we'll do it. All it takes to get started is to go to patreon.com/victimsandvillains or simply click the link in the episode description wherever you guys are currently listening or streaming this episode. Pick your tier and get started today. Yes, it's that simple. So quickly select the tier that you want and help us get hope into the hands of the depressed and the suicidal today.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Grab your old man shoes. Yeah, that was probably one of my favorite running gags in this. Before, like, do you want to bounce around this cast real quick and then come back to Nicolas Cage? Or you want to star Nicolas Cage and then bounce around to the cast?
I don't know. I don't have a ton more to say, to be honest with you. I think Nicolas Cage was... I think we should talk about Nicolas Cage, but...
I really want to talk about Alfred Molina, because like,
okay, go for it.
I just really love like rewatching like Spider-Man 2 and No Way Home within the last few months.
Yeah,
like I have grown to have like a true love for Alfred Molina as a character actor.
Yeah.
And like this movie is just like one of those like examples of like it's a family movie, and like it literally could have just been like just crap. Like totally. The villain could have just been like, man, but like Alfred Molina just gives it his all, and he's so freaking good in this movie.
Yeah, he does. He really does. And you can tell, like, as much as this is a family movie, Alfred Molina does really lean into the character that they wrote for him. He's really, you know, he's not one of these like just malicious guys, but you can tell that he has his own agenda, and he will stop at nothing to see that agenda through. And yeah, he's really good. He has sort of this sidekick for a little while, which you can tell he despises this character, but he works with him because it's to his advantage. And yeah.
Well, that character is a complete mockery of everything that he like wanted to like go and do, which is, I think it's really interesting that they put that in there, because it feels like a slight commentary on how like we as a culture have kind of looked at magic throughout the course, or like witchcraft, or you know, sorcery, whatever you want to say, throughout the years, where like it was kind of like this like held in like a certain reverence in his time, and then you jump into this new time era, and it no longer holds that reverence. It's a Chris Angel mind freak kind of thing.
Yeah, it's Penn and Teller. Actually, that's a really good point. I don't know if you've seen Fantasia 2000, but Penn and Teller are in it, and they introduce something. I don't know if it was Sorcerer's Apprentice or not, but they introduce something. But yeah, I think you make a good point. So basically what happens is there's this character, he's this like English brat, and he's this obvious like Chris Angel sort of ripoff, and he wears, you know, makeup and such. And he is like aware of real sorcery, but his like master, the guy who was supposed to train him, like totally ditched him.
Well, he disappeared. Like, I believe he said that he just disappeared when he was like training.
And so he just went into stage magic and just got really, really famous off of it. You know, just parlay tricks and that sort of thing. And so, like, Alfred Molina's character has this sort of disdain for him, because he's like, you could be really powerful, but instead you, like, squander your potential on this, on, like, business and, like, money and crap. And, yeah, it's really interesting. It's kind of one of those things that makes me really love, like, Zatanna and Zatara a lot. It's really interesting. So he has this character follow him around and do different things, and he eventually like takes advantage of him and takes his power from him and stuff. But
which I think it's also funny that like he never intentionally like wants to be a bad guy. It's kind of like he's looking and seeking for that
validation.
That validation, that totally. Mentor figure so much that like I think that's, and I think that speaks to the importance of like having someone like that in your own life.
Yeah.
Like, and what that could like actually mean for your mental health, not only to be validated, but also to have someone that's going to set you on the right path. Because what's the old line, that all things are permissible, but not all things are, what's the end of that? How's that
beneficial?
Go? Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. So you have that to where it's like, okay, well, like, I might not necessarily be in this position to where it's like I need to constantly be validated and everything that I think goes, because if you have someone that you can actually like bounce ideas off of, that's kind of like a mentor or like mentee, you know, kind of relationship, you have this tendency to, well, last, be a stronger person in the long run because of it.
Yeah. Yeah. And you see like, yeah, you see a similar thing with like the Dave character, where like he becomes kind of the laughingstock of his class and his area as like a 9 or 10 year old, and then you see him like grow up by 10 years. He's in college. He has like one friend. He's just a klutz and a genius, but a nerd. And like all of a sudden, it's like all of a sudden this, you know, Balthazar character is just in his life and like wanting to like pour into him because he sees so much potential in him. And he doesn't always know what to do with it. But then like once he gets a taste of like that affirmation and the potential of like what he can do and the fact that what he can do can make a difference, he starts to like care. He starts to really care. He doesn't just want to like be left alone anymore. He wants to like pursue this girl and pursue these abilities. And it starts to matter to him.
Yeah, there's even a point in the movie where they address that, where he's like, you know, what's different about you? Like, there's something that's different about you. And he's like, I'll be honest with you, like, I don't intentionally like really know what you're talking about, because you can see that difference. And I mean, it quite literally is exactly that. Like, when you find it, man, like it really does, excuse me, make all the difference in your body language, your outlook on life.
Yeah.
And stuff. And like, even if you can't have like a mentor mentee relationship or like someone that is like having your validation for you, like even like I would say that like Magic and like his Tesla experiment was not necessarily like, it was a creative outlet for him. So yeah. Like he was finding validation not through like a direct person,
yeah,
or influence, but like through art.
Yeah. Yeah. More or less. Yeah, like art and science. Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, basically in the movie, he has these giant Tesla coils, and he's able to run currents through them, and each current makes like a different sound. And so he's able to actually program them to do like simple melodies, and he can do like little songs and stuff. And yeah, and it's just really beautiful thing. He kind of just discovers that like, yeah, he can express himself, and it's really cool. Yeah, I don't know how much I have to say.
Which is where Stevie Wonder's superstition comes into play.
That's true.
So, let me hit you with some more trivia, because I do think that we are kind of running out of things to say, because this isn't a very deep movie.
No, totally not. It's a lot of fun, though.
All right. Oh, man. Okay, here we go. All right, so Jay Baruchel and Teresa Palmer were both attached to a famous movie. Would you like to know take a guess at what that famous movie was going to be called? It was supposed to come out right before this.
National Treasure 3.
Not National Treasure 3. It was actually supposed to be George Miller's canceled Justice League Mortal movie.
What?
Yeah.
It was a live action?
It was indeed live
action. What was he going to be?
I believe Jay Baruchel, if I remember correctly, was either going to be Green Lantern or Barry Allen.
He can be Wally West.
All right, so I got a couple of trivia facts for you here. These are the best ones that I could find out of the ones that IMDb has. So I will go to one that I thought was cool. This is actually the first feature film to use Codex Vision 3 250D 527 film stock. Kodak previously provided the production with 50,000 feet of the stock months before it was commercially made available.
I feel so educated.
So, you know. Originally, the role for Becky was auditioned by Brie Larson.
Praise the Lord, she didn't get it. Also, I'm not surprised she didn't get it.
But this is probably one that I think is the most interesting one, is the idea for the movie was largely Nicolas Cage's. As he wanted to explore a mystic world with a magical character.
My dude, yeah. And you said earlier before we watched this movie that like he doesn't have a ton of executive producing credits.
Not ones that I've seen.
You can look it up.
I can look it up. Give me 1 second to look it up.
That was one of the first things we noticed like going into this movie. You know, they were running some of the credits and he was an executive producer, and that's pretty exciting. I feel like normally if you have a star who produces or executive produces a film, it means they actually like care about it and believe in it. They're not just, they didn't just necessarily like make an audition.
So he actually only has 17 movies to his credit as far as a producer goes. And I'm just going to list them off really quickly. It is Bel Air, Shadow of the Vampire, Sonny, The Life of David Gale, which is interesting because he is not actually star in that one.
Yeah.
Lord of War, The Wicker Man, which we'll be doing later this year for our 50th episode. The Dresden Files, which is a TV show. He executive produced 13 episodes. Next, Bangkok Dangerous, Sorcerer's Apprentice, 1,000 Words, which, again, really interesting because he didn't actually star in that at all. That is actually an Eddie Murphy-led movie.
Wow.
Can't Stand to See Losing You, which is a documentary called Surviving the Police. Vengeance, A Love Story, A Score to Settle, Willy's Wonderland, Pig, and the upcoming The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent.
Gosh.
So
you're telling me it's some of his best movies he executive produced. Right. That's very cool. I don't know if you've seen Next, but I loved Next.
It's
been some years.
Not seen Next.
Yeah, Next is, I remember it being really cool.
Well, I'll actually cover it.
I can't remember if I've seen Bangkok Dangerous or not. That's the one on the list that that's the only one on the list besides the newer ones that I was really aware of.
But if we ever, when we eventually run out of Nicolas Cage, we can just go to his producing credits.
Yeah, that'd be cool. That'd be a lot of fun. Yeah. Of course, we've also, listeners, thrown around the idea of, after we run out of Nicolas Cage, going to a different actor or actress. Kind of an interesting idea.
Yeah. All right, so my last one is that although the film, as the title suggests, is ultimately based on the Johanna Wolfgang von Goethe's famous German poem, which I am not going to pronounce the title from,
sure,
1797, which inspired the piece of music by Paul Dukas from 1897, also briefly heard here, which in turn was used in the adaptation in Fantasia, yep, 1940, the German version completely missed the connection, translating the title instead as German for The Duel of the Sorcerers.
Interesting. Very cool, though.
So, yeah. So, that is The Sorcerer's Apprentice. You guys can stream it now on Disney Plus. But the ultimate question comes down to, is The Sorcerer's Apprentice worthy of high praise?
I mean, I think it is. I think it is. I mean, it's not, it's nothing new. It's nothing astounding, but it's a lot of fun. It's one of those things like, if you're a 20 plus something cinephile, if you probably have no kids, then maybe you'll disagree. It is definitely a family movie. But if you grew up on family movies, if you have kids, then yeah, this is definitely like a really fun movie. I am kind of glad that it didn't get a sequel. But it's a lot of fun.
So I am going to put a preface with my answer.
Okay.
So my preface is this.
You're always particular.
This barely makes the high praise mark for me.
Sure. And you're not a fantasy guy. It's fine.
And I preface that by saying that even though I'm not a fantasy guy, I genuinely had a blast with this movie.
Yeah.
But I would never recommend this movie. So my preface is this. Is like, there are certain movies that like you and I grew up with. Like Blank Check is sitting over here. Blank Check, I think, is a great example. Another Disney movie. And it's a movie that is very much time period. And like, if you didn't grow up on it, like,
it's not for you.
It's not for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's not something that like I would recommend somebody, oh, you missed out on Blank Check from 1994 as a kid. Like, you should check it out. Or yeah, like MVP or like Air Bud or like
Good Burger. Yeah, yeah.
Good Burger. Like those weird like 90s, early 2000s movies.
Totally.
Like, and that, this to me kind of has the same energy as those movies.
Okay.
Like, if you miss the mark for it, like, when it was initially coming out. I don't really recommend this movie.
Yeah.
But I had a blast with it.
Totally.
Like, it felt nostalgic to me, but it's not a movie that, like, I'm dying to see again.
Yeah, totally. Cool. Cool.
Well, I don't know what we're doing next time. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. We've been talking. Do we have any suggestions or recommendations from people?
I got to reach out to our Patreon people.
Cool, that'd be cool. We've been talking about, I actually, for Christmas, just got Josh this 7-inch vinyl of Nicolas Cage. A couple of songs from the movie Wild at Heart. David Lynch's Wild at Heart. I am not a David Lynch fan, but my wife is and Josh is. So we've been talking about doing that one. We've been talking about doing Left Behind. Because, you know, why not watch the movies that you know are just going to be horrible as soon as you can? And Left Behind is pretty up there.
I looked it up after you sent me the picture that you'd bought it, and I was curious about what it held on Rotten Tomatoes.
Oh, gosh.
9%. But we've also covered movies that have held lower than that, and that I've had an absolute blast with.
Sure. Yeah.
So, like, to me, I'm not like, all right, like, Rotten Tomatoes in, like, the grand scheme of Nicolas Cage literally means squat.
Yeah, yeah, right, right. We're going to, we've been talking about some benchmark episode movies, so episode 50, episode 75, that kind of thing. Toss around the idea of Nicolas Cage's first Academy Award for one of those and things like that. Yeah, so if you have any suggestions, let us know.
Yeah, we would love to get it. And also, I think it would be really cool to also do a, like, trying to find some of his, like, TV work.
Yeah, like, I've been thinking about that too.
Doing an episode on TV, because I'm sure that, like, there's probably, like, a Saturday Night Live episode out there with him.
Yeah, there is. I know his debut was on television, but it was a pilot that didn't get greenlit.
It found its way on YouTube.
There you go.
So maybe that's coming in the some point this year, but we've got some cool things working out for it. And so, yeah. Also, Micah got me for Christmas. Also, we got each other Nicolas Cage themed gifts. Mine wasn't as extravagant as his. I got him Pig and Vampire's Kiss.
True.
But he found me this, like, VHS, and it's just Nicolas Cage acting out.
He's narrating.
Acting out and narrating the story of Davy Crockett.
Yep.
And it is weird and wonderful.
He really, like, he puts himself into it, too. It's so fun.
Well, yeah, one of the best things, too, that we didn't even talk about is the scene where they're in Chinatown and from this movie, and they just get disguised as cops.
Yeah! No! That was one of the best parts of the movie. It's so seamless for Nick Cage, too. It is so, like, for real. If you think Nicolas Cage is a bad actor, you need to watch this scene. Like, he just flips.
Like the before and after.
Yes. It is incredible.
His New York accent is, like, unmatched.
It's so good.
And, like, Jay Baruchel's, like, reaction to it, like, when he's, like, has the mustache. It's like, oh, it's real. I was probably my favorite scene this whole movie. But yeah, I don't know. 2022 is going to be a good year for it. We're hoping to also do some live panels and stuff.
Yeah,
too. So
hopefully,
if you guys are out there, con organizers, or know someone who is, we would love to come and do it. But
totally,
yeah. Where can people find you online, though?
You can find me. You can find me on Instagram at Mullet Stash. You can find me on Facebook, just on my name. You can find me on Twitter, which I don't use a lot, but it's Mullet Stash _. I do spoken word poetry, and I on the 26th of January, I released a 3-track little EP called the Uncreated EP. So you can find that on MicahKimber.bandcamp, or you can find it on Spotify or Apple Music, that kind of thing, just under Micah Kimber. Yeah, it's this weird thing that I do, and I'd love to know what people think of it.
And you guys can also hear one of those poems at the end of this episode. You guys can find me on Letterboxd and at Captain Nostalgia. You guys can find our parent company, Victims and Villains, on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Twitch, YouTube, Patreon, and wherever you guys get your podcasts from. Go to victimsandvillains.net for more podcasts like this, movie reviews, and most importantly, our mental health resource library, all of which you guys can find in the descriptions below. But until next time, remember to keep on caging. This is Grow.
Nice. I think creativity needs a lot of space to grow. A friend said that to me the other day on a voice memo, as I sat next to a pillow by a window on the sill of which grew a single sprig of cilantro. I immediately thought of the numerous times I'd readjusted this vine-like herb and how, no matter what, it would defiantly curve into some new drape, reshape its landscape, and behave creatively. Whether it's ants or plants or the coelacanth sneaking out to dance, to climb, or swimming in colder waters away from those grubby scientists with their grubby hands, every creature bears the same resonant feature. To fill the spaces and stay alive, we become creative. If you stop growing, you stop showing signs of life. If you start slowing, you'll stop forcing oxygen through your gills. Your sense of thrill will atrophy. You'll start to swill the addictive nothingness of passivity into a gut made for ever new things. No longer captains on the sea of actively seeking a creative means by which to pine through the brine into the uncharted territories of the heart that God gave, we sink. Don't sink. Row.